Hello and welcome to another edition of our Financial Markets Insights in Conversation with podcast. I'm delighted today to be joined by Christian Schwartz, who is the head of banking and payment services for Volantic FSA. Welcome, Christian.
Hello, Tina. Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. First, a little bit of scene setting. Financial institutions' payments processing infrastructure is having to do a lot of heavy lifting currently to meet regulatory obligations like SEPA instant payments, verification of payee, MT retirements, and a raft of other payments processing workflows. In Europe, the final phase of mandated SEPA instant payments compliance is well underway, with non-Euro but EU institutions having to satisfy SEPA rules for receiving instant payments by 9th of April 2027, not that far away, and with respect to sending instant payments by the 9th of July 2027. Of course, these deadlines mark significant milestones and challenges for financial institutions in the development of rigorous, robust, and real-time payments infrastructure. At the same time, digital-first technologies and financial assets like stablecoins and tokenized deposits are beginning to reshape the broader financial markets landscape. Today, Christian and I are going to discuss how banks are addressing the multiple and potentially conflicting challenges of regulatory compliance, operational resilience, infrastructure modernization, and, of course, competitive differentiation in the provision of efficient payments. Welcome again, Christian. Let's start with some easy questions. You joined Volantic relatively recently into this role. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what drew you to this role at Volantic.
Well, thank you, Tina, again. Welcome, everyone. I joined Volantic on the 12th of January, and I really like the step I've made. The last 4 years I have been with Finastra. I was delighted to head their payments business for Europe. Why did I join Volantic? It's a very European-focused organization. We are only European-focused. Of course, I'm very proud of our product suite and our people and the knowledge of our people. That's very much recognized from all the customers I have been talking to. And Volantic was competing against Finastra and winning against Finastra. So I'm joining the winning team here. And my background is I'm coming predominantly out of the IT industry. So the Microsofts, HPs, SAPs of this world. I have been spent with the last 25 to 30 years always in an international role.
Thank you. And just for the listeners' benefits, and obviously I know the answer, it would be fair to say that Volantic FSA is not only very European-focused, but you're very business development-focused. You are very much specifically focused on the automation of transaction workflows, whether they're trading or payments, as we're talking about today. But it's a very specialist software focus on workflow automation. Would that be correct?
Absolutely, Tina. Yes, of course. I was only having the sight on my business, but Volantic FSA has, of course, the trading business. And as you said, we're coming out of the financial messaging service. So here, transaction engine in order to automate robust communication between financial services systems, either within a bank or between banks or between several providers in the network of the financial services industry. We are focusing in Europe only on the financial services industry. We don't do anything else. And I would say on top of my head, 99.9% is banks. That's where we're focusing on, and to make sure that those guys are having a robust system they can really trust in.
And again, just to position that, and that means they in turn can be more competitive in terms of the services, the payment services they can offer to their client base. That's correct, isn't it?
It is, on one hand, the competitiveness. The other thing is, as you outlined at the very beginning, there is lots of changes in the industry required due to regulation. And you have to be very adaptive. And if you look at the European payment area, if you look compared with the US, you have about 6 to 8 rails which are existing and you cover the whole US payment complexity. If I look into Europe, you have the SEPA, you have the non-SEPA currencies. I have stopped counting in the number of about 500 rails. And here at Volantic, we are capable to run all these 500 clearings. We can address them. We can make sure that all our customers, wherever they go, whatever challenge they face, we can master that. And that's where I've joined Volantic.
Thank you. And that's a very timely segue into it. I mean, let's start with, we reference SEPA, SEPA, however we pronounce it. But SEPA, I think, is it potentially the last piece of the regulation to come into effect, or the latest piece of the regulations come into effect, is instant payments. And as we addressed in the beginning, you know, there's been various timelines. Last year was a big year for SEPA. And now we've got the final timelines to engage all the banks that are EU, but not necessarily Euro banks. So question, how big a challenge is this shift from instance as an option to instance as the mandatory default for banks?
I think it's one of the hugest challenges of the last years, next to the ISO 20022 challenge banks have been facing. There is a clear reason to it. The European banks still have the majority of their infrastructure based on legacy systems. And those legacy systems are not capable to run 24/7, and they are not instant capable. And we have seen it took the European area to adopt to ISO 20022 by about 20 years. And as also the idea of instant payment is not something from days yesterday. It is 15 and more years old when the first regulations came out. And now it is enforced. And now you see the service level increase, customer satisfaction, which is coming. And the volumes are not yet at the standard SEPA amounts, but they are growing fast. And every bank I'm talking to every day sees increasing number in the instant world. And that is the next standard, and it must become the next standard. Otherwise, our businesses are not supported. It cannot be that we have a transaction lasting 2 or 3 days and nobody knows where the money is. And then you have a failure, and then you need to investigate for 2 or 3 more days. And neither the payee nor the payer knows where the money is, and somewhere it's stuck. And if you think about the magnitude on it, if you are a large corporation and you have to send out all your salaries, and instead of sending out the salaries on a day X and you have 3 days on money traveling to the payee, this could be a treasure. You can keep the cash in your treasury and gain interest. That's a basic thing which everybody can gain on, and a very, very basic business advantage why instant is coming.
And equally, a cynic might argue that kind of suited banks because they benefited from having the money with themselves in terms of overnight rates and so on. And now, because it's mandated, that goes away because they now are obliged to make it available within 10 seconds, whatever the rule is.
I'm not sure if they really could benefit from the money hanging around, because if the money hangs in the systems, they cannot transfer it overnight. It just sits somewhere in a system and waits to be from one legacy consolidation batch job to the 24-hour later one. And the money is basically disappeared. So you don't have any interest. You have no reason doing so. There is no one has a real benefit. On the contrary, legacy systems are very busy with these overnight jobs. And then you have to rework because there's some failure, whatever you have. I think for the whole industry, it's a very, very good move. And if you look into other continents who have not the legacy infrastructure, but built directly on a real-time infrastructure and doing account wallet-to-wallet transactions, the business there is much smoother, less frictions, less hurdles. And also in the micropayment world, it's much cheaper. And I think here the benefit, if I look what the costs for a bank are, SEPA transactions or SWIFT transactions, the prices are way too high. And here banks will see the benefit sooner or later on the instant world. And then they can retire those legacy systems.
So again, back to you in terms of where Atlantic and Atlantic FSA is potentially supporting is that you can look at the workflow rather than the legacy platform and say, how do we create a workflow that meets this requirement without the bank necessarily having to completely rebuild its infrastructure, working with what they've got and then say, what do we need to do to make it SEPA compliant? Would that be fair?
This is exactly, you hit the nail on the head. Of course, every bank board member, and I'd be fully with them, never touch a running system when it's your core banking system. That's kind of your heartbeat. Yeah? Nobody wants to exchange the heart at free will, let's put it that, because it's time to. So what we do is we take out the business process of the payment stream and the payment orchestration, and we communicate, of course, with the legacy system, with the core banking system. But we kind of extract the needed workflow, and that must not be every payment workflow. You do one by one. And if you say it's only one leg, then it's only one leg. But the bank can start with us to build a new payment orchestration system. So we take from the payment initiation, whatever the channel is, we take the payment instruction, orchestrate it according to the bank's rule and business decisions. And then we call the FX, we call the verification of PE, we call the account statement, whatsoever, what is needed. And then we reformat in whatever rail and corridor the payment needs to be put in and put it forward to SEPA Instant, to TIPS, to RT1, to whomever you want to have.
Which leads nicely into the next question I wanted to ask you. So we talked about the challenges for banks or any regulatory compliance perspective. Beyond SEPA regulation, I mean, banks are also facing a lot of pressure from an increasingly sophisticated customer base because they're increasingly demanding, because they understand if my bank doesn't give it to me, there are people who can. So you've got bank competition always. But increasingly as well, you've got the competition from non-bank PSPs, the e-moneys and the e-payment and the payment institutions. Is that changing the traditional payments landscape in your experience?
Actually, I wonder why banks are not jumping on that topic. FX turns a cross-border transaction, FX, that's where the money is. This is where banks make money out of payment. It's not the SEPA transaction, it's the FX. And I see these disruptive fintechs, they take exactly that profit stream. It's not only a revenue stream, it's a profit stream away from the big banks, and they don't recognize it. It happens under their radar screen. And yes, it will change because on several things. The one is, if you look at Revolut and others, and they do direct transaction, account to account or wallet to wallet. So the networks like SWIFT, like SEPA and so forth, they are not touched anymore. So there is a side railway, if you will, that will change the infrastructure. That will change the bank's business because all of a sudden your FX transactions are reduced. And if you look at Revolut becomes a bank lately, so they will take not only the FX transaction from a customer, they will take the whole customer. And at first, it's an SME customer or a private customer like me. Yeah? I have to transfer regularly money to my cousin somewhere. It's a monthly fee, so I do it with Revolut or with Wise. And then I have a whole banking account with all savings services, with all trading services. I move my whole money transaction there, and this is offered, and that means a loss of business for banks. And I think Bill Gates has made a very, very interesting statement. I think it was back in the 90s when he said banking will be always necessary. Banks might not.
Oh, that's a very good. And do you think that? I mean, I'm just saying, I remember the old correspondent banking days. Is it because they can't see what's coming, or because they don't believe that the disruptors are going to be as powerful as that?
This is what's going to come. And I was really wondering why the big banks, they still believe that they can master the correspondence challenge, which apparently they don't. And they don't see it and they don't believe it. You really need to give them data of their own business in order to convince them to look into the business, because apparently the fraction of the losing part is not hurting them yet. Because if I look in what happens the next stage, so we go from SEPA Instant, we go to, it's my belief, we go from SEPA Direct Debit. So the SEPA Instant is kind of covering the credit transfer. So finally, the SEPA region becomes really one payment area and not 27, with different national banks having their saying, but it's one central scheme. And the next is to get rid of direct debit. There will be request to pay. It's more safe. It has a customer protection point in it. It will, based on the SEPA Instant, it will replace DD. So there is a whole retirement of processes and infrastructure. The next thing coming is wallets. You cannot oversee the functionality of wallets. And even if we don't talk about any digitized or tokenized assets, we talk fiat money in wallets, wallet-to-wallet transfers. All of a sudden, the whole concept of correspondent banking needs to be rethought and reshaped. And also for us as a banking payments engine and payment hub vendor, we need to rethink what our technology needs to do in the future, because these kind of services are not that dominant anymore. We need to look at what are the platforms like Revolut Reset, etc., we need to integrate into our offering because banks will still be there. So we need to integrate them and they need to have an idea of integrate them. And there's just popping up new fintech. They are just thinking about the infrastructure to integrate banks and stablecoins, wallets, and all sorts of alternative protected or non-protected ways of doing payments. And that will shake up the tree in the next 3, 4, 5 years. I'm very convinced. But still, we have to see how much transactions still remaining on the traditional corridor. Yeah. 330 billion, it was last year, the transactions on stablecoins. Yes, it's growing like hell, but compared to the standard money flow in the US dollar, it's a tiny, tiny little thing. But still, it's growing, it's there, and it will stay. It came to stay. And it will surprise us and its corners and ways into the businesses in the next couple of years. We will have lots of surprises. What creative people are will invent. And this is where my statement always comes that for the time being in Europe, innovation in banking and payment only came by regulation. Now, with these new things enter the regulation, that drives really innovation by small challenger banks, fintechs, and that's where breaking up the old crusted world of this 300 years old traditional business.
Two things. One is a very nice segue into a small discussion about stablecoin. But before we get on to that, you've just made the very good points. And I think we use this exhaustively. It's, you know, it is a truth universally acknowledged that the connectivity is always the key. It almost doesn't matter how good your technology is. It doesn't matter how big a bank you are. It doesn't matter if you can't connect to all the things you need to connect with in an efficient way. And so for the last couple of years, it's all been about integration and interoperability, out payments and across all banking functions, and everybody now gets it. But there's that moment where you go from talking about it, that being a buzzword, or interoperability, to actually where we've come in the last few years really quickly, to your point. It's gone from being a perception to very much a reality because there are technologies that facilitate this. And again, from the Lantic's perspective, part of the fact that you're focused on the workflow, it's the automation, but and also understanding the connectivity and being neutral about that. So in the bank, whether it's bank or anybody else, if the customer, the client, needs to access those channels, the skill is, from Valantic's perspective, is being having the technology that enables them to knit that together in the most efficient way, again, without having to replace everything or start from scratch. They can look at what they've got and who they need now to connect to in this new world and say, well, actually, we want to be connected to Wise or whomever it happens to be on this rail.
Yes, from that perspective, I think there is a whole way of thinking on the business because currently your initiation, you say you need to transfer 100,000 euros from A to B. And through the rule books, it was defined if it's a certain limit, you have to go to the target network in order to be secure, to be traceable, la, 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 la. With that new technologies, banks can select, if they are intelligent enough and have the information quickly, they can select, maybe, and here I use a new term, it's probably the stablecoin sandwich, and I'm not going to use target, but I use a stablecoin sandwich process, which gives me half of the commissions I need to pay. And then the whole thing becomes super interesting that you are capable to interoperate with everybody in the market and you have the flexibility in connecting. And here comes where I do a bit wave the flag of Valantic compared to our main competitors. We have a technology which allows us to be very fast and very, very precise in making those connections. Much faster, much better than anyone I've seen in the market.
So we were just talking about, you know, the competition, the Wises of this world, the non-banks, the fintech disruptors. But we also touched on stablecoin as a real thing. And again, people have talked about stablecoins for quite a few years in terms of their role in cross-border payments, particularly being, to your point, a stablecoin sandwich, which I love, between two fiat legs of a transaction. Estimated, as you say, it's small in the bigger scheme of things, but I was at an event recently where they said there are 330 billion of tokenized assets now in circulation, of which 90% of those are represented by stablecoins. So they are pretty hard to ignore. So I think you've touched on this, but to ask you specifically, how should banks be thinking about stablecoin and what should they be doing to manage this now accelerating convergence of TradFi and DeFi products and technologies, frankly, you know, tokenization, blockchain, etc. It's no longer the, I think, if, it is very much now when and how banks embrace these things.
I think, and here again, you see the legacy of Europe. I think the US was a bit faster than we have been, and Asia as well. But 95%, if I'm not mistaken, of the current stable coins are US dollar backed. There's only two or three relevant ones euro backed. There are a couple of Chinese ones and some other old currencies. But I think there was that bitter taste for the European area that bitcoins or blockchain assets have been messed up with stablecoins. A total non-regulated area, which is for me just lottery or betting or whatever, come to a technology used new way of doing business, but in a secure regulated environment and with MiCA and all the other needed regulation. And here I say really needed regulation to get security for the customer and security for the business. Banks must catch up quickly in Europe. And you have seen a couple of European, major European banks have been joining together to release the first or bring the first stablecoin, Euroback stablecoin to the market. We are late, but finally they catch up. There is no way passing by the stablecoin because it is not a speculation. It's a real gold backup, so a fiat backup money. It is tokenized, it's traceable, and it's programmable. And these are bringing enormous new business opportunities and allowing streamlining processes, straight through processing from not only the payment, because what is the payment? You order a good and you receive a good, and you need just the value exchange. On the other side is the money. But international business, they have lots more processes around their trading than just the money flow. And with stablecoins, you can program it. You can release money on certain papers have been arrived at the bank, la, la, la. So there are these old stories. But now it becomes true. And Europe is far behind because of the complexity of the European banking area, but also because of the ignorance of the European banks.
Do you think there is an element of, we'll just do nothing, it's never going to catch on, we'll just do nothing and it's going to go away?
Exactly. So if we don't look at it, we don't see it. It doesn't exist.
This isn't a particularly surprising start. I think it's interesting, but banks do have a sort of a legacy reputation for, you know, going through these stages and perhaps taking a bit longer. So someone, again, at the event we were at the other week, said exactly that. They said, we think, you know, if there's a 30-year cycle, which is basically the tenet for a bank, for innovation in banking, they said we're about halfway through in terms of proper blockchain adoption, you know, where it's taken seriously by banks rather than a necessary evil that they need to be looking at. So I guess that's where we are with this, and your quote is a good one.
And blockchain, I think many banks have been, or many use cases have been, just been afraid for the pure blockchain as a distributed ledger. What we see now with Bitcoin, the mining of the next Bitcoin is just more way expensive than the Bitcoin is worth it almost. And it's very complicated and very resource intense. But if you look at the blockchain as a distributed ledger and you have the distribution, let's say to 5, 6 or maximum 10 registered trusted bodies. And here the national banks of Europe are the best ones to do so because they are trusted pillars in our banking and in our payment system. But then you have only 10 parties exchanging the blockchain, which means energy cost goes down, reliability goes down, speed goes up. Why not using it? Now it's there. Yeah. Now you can imagine it. And the IT infrastructure and the power of the IT is here. We're not using it yet. And here, let me give another example, which is really astonishing me all the times. If you look at the markets, the US, Europe, and Asia, or African and Asia, we call ourselves in Europe legacy and slow. What is your guess? How many paychecks, these paper things, are still exist in the US?
I'm always both surprised and amazed at the both the checks and wires and the checkbooks.
50% in a year is still in paper. And for me, the funny thing is, if I send a paper check to a bank somewhere in the middle of nowhere, the bank doesn't have an electronic system to check if the check is valid. They need to send it back by post to validate it. So that's really basically they do that on the back of a horse. That's the speed they're thinking. And then you take the other side of the world, like Asia and Africa, where everything is instant. Everything is digital. There is nothing. If you tell them there is a paper check, they start laughing because that's like the gold nugget they would exchange. And we in Europe, we're sitting somehow in the middle. We have eliminated the checks. I think there is only a very few countries and banks where you can still trade kind of thing with checks. The Czech Republic is one of them, funny enough with the name. But yeah, so we are in the middle, but this is the development. And as you said, 30 years, and I think the 30 years become shorter because technology invents faster. And if banks are not adopting faster, the market will tell them because the fintechs of this world will kill them.
Well, that brings us very nicely, actually, to what was going to be our last question. And that was, what does the future look like? And we can focus just on Europe, which is our focus as a business. But so looking ahead, we've talked about 30-year cycles and things. What do you think the biggest changes are likely to be? What do you think banks should really be focused on as a priority in the next 3, 5, 10 years to ensure that they're still viable, still relevant in the payments world going forward?
I think the change of the instant world is not over. Yeah, we have the obligations to be reachable and to be able to send. But if I look at my banking app today, it's not the exception that I use non-instant. Yeah, it's the exception that I use instant. It's not automatically instant sending. So the banks are still afraid because the volumes, their infrastructure are not ready yet, just period. That is one thing where the whole industry needs to scale up and ramp up a better, more robust and more stable infrastructure. Second thing, as we have been already talking, is stablecoins. The new way of cross-border business. The huge amount of innovation in it and new controversial thinking about payments. But I love these discussions and we will see a lot of movements there. Maybe some is also the dead end. Yes, there will be something which will be, okay, sorry, it was the wrong way, but that will happen a lot and banks could be really driving that innovation because they have the financial capabilities to really try out things and make things happen. One thing is on top of my mind is data. We have with the ISO 20022, there has been a regulation which has an enormous amount of information and banks are sitting on a gold mine of data. For them currently, when I talk to them, yeah, that MX is a pain in the neck because we don't have the storage, we don't have the capabilities in our core banking system. I say, that's for me a total wrong viewpoint because this data is much like the Facebooks of this world. They live from data and the banks could benefit out of that regulation, but they need to adopt it. And my last point is on a pure technology, it's not on a business side, it's on a pure technology coming from the technology side. It's apparent the change from legacy to real time. 24/7 real time, that will be the next challenge. If I look at banks, they still love their mainframes, which have their daily process time of 2-3 hours outage, batch process and what have you. And this will not be survival. That can't survive in the demands we have today. That is my prediction.
That's a really good prediction. I mean, obviously, in terms of hot topics, it's been like buzzword bingo, tokenization, stablecoin, etc. But there is no question that the whole data piece is evidently also shifting considerably to your point. So both in terms of creating operational intelligence, because the more you know, and if you are connected and interoperable and everything, your processes are automated and efficient, then you can gather all this data and know exactly where it needs to go, but also what you can do with it. So there's operational intelligence. And to your point, there's actually business insight, right? That says you could be much smarter about knowing about what your customers are doing. And in terms interpreting that and predict using that to shape the next services and the next customer experiences and what you focus your efforts on, because you can then say we can't do everything and things are changing. We recognize that and there are new technologies and new rails. However, from a customer engagement perspective and customer stickiness, there are still things where we can give them enormous value.
Here you have one of my beloved points mentioned. Having data, analyzing data is something machine learning AI is pretty good in it. And I would love to see banks going away from creating senseless chatbots to annoy end customers on mobiles and front ends, which are totally useless if you have a real problem, but use that capability and that investment in analyzing data and making it real. We have been talking about the eroding FX business in the large banks. If they would use the MX data, they would already know not only where, what, how much money they lose, where, when, which customers, which pattern, and they could create products to counterattack those competitors. That is absolute, yeah.
I agree. It is now not just turning this whole data management piece, not just from a necessary evil, you know, where we've got to gather it because, whether it's regulatory reporting purposes or anything else, but actually being able to interpret it in a meaningful way. Yeah, not chatbots. We all hate those. Is there anything we haven't touched on today, Christian? Any other key things that are very important to you and to Valantic FSA in terms of your priorities in the short term and longer term?
No, I think you touched everything. We discussed everything. And I'm happily and welcome everyone and everybody to ring me, ping me. Happy to discuss further in details. Coming back anytime you have a question, Tina.
Thank you very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure, Christian.
Thank you. Likewise, and thanks for having me.